Kelly is fine in here, says Batwench. Yeah, oh, but that's just the sisterhood. I don't trust anything she says anymore. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with
the audio.
I wasn't
going to go that far. I was just going to go with it's a Doctor Who fan thing. I mean...
This way she goes, no, there's nothing wrong with Kelly's audio. And Kelly has to go, no, BW, it's just... That's not one of those things where you have to just stick with me blindly. It's okay. Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. It's Friday. It's a drizzly and horrible, dreary day in Birmingham. I've left this office for about 45 seconds to make a cup of coffee and looked out the window and thought, stuff that. Going back inside. One thing I have done today, because apparently we've got Uber in Birmingham, started yesterday. So I have periodically been checking my Uber application to see what it does or doesn't do. And I can honestly report that in 4 out of 5 occasions, I've had this message. Birmingham loves Uber, but all cars are in use. So they haven't got many drivers. I think they've got a couple and that's it, maybe. So Birmingham may have Uber, but have is in inverted commas. So there you go. Some of you will know I've written a blog post about Uber in London on our review section. And it wasn't a good experience for me, it has to be said. But I did accept that the Uber experience that I saw in San Francisco during Macworld was excellent. And I think Uber could do very, very well in Birmingham because I think the city's laid out very well for it. But it's not for London. Not for London at all. Joining me to discuss the proper Mac news of the week, which is absolutely stunning. What a great panel we have. Starting us off, not a new boy, but first time on the show as Apple News Today weekly thing person, Steve Sandy.
Apple World Today.
Apple
there
World
we go.
Today News World thing type.
See, I'll show you the screen there. See, we even have a logo and everything. So I think we're real. How is everybody this morning?
Well, we're grand. How the hell is Apple World Today going?
Apple World Today is going pretty darn well. As a lot of people may know, I used to be with the unofficial Apple weblog, Tua, and we got shut down by AOL. Last Friday, actually it was I think last Wednesday, but anyway, yeah, Wednesday, yeah. The whatever the heck it's one of those things where everything is kind of blurred over the last week because we several of us decided we were not going to take it lying down. We decided to start a new site and we basically got it up and running. I won't say overnight, but over the weekend, and a couple little glitches here and there, but for the most part, things have been going pretty well.
Well, good luck to you, mate. I've got to say, we're right behind you. If there's anything we can do to help, then do tell us, and we will do it, because KOL. Sorry.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but...
I said it last week, and I had to bleep it, so I'm going to say it again. There we go. Go on, Brian. Sorry, you were saying.
I was just going to say congratulations, man. That's just fantastic. I'm really happy for you folks.
It is. It's awesome. It's great news that that you've come away from that with smelling a wet paint. Definitely.
Yeah, the interesting thing about it is, you know, we decided that we really did not want to try to do the traditional advertising model. So we're looking at sponsorships, getting software developers, for instance, Real Mac Software is going to be our sponsor for next week. But, you know, to sponsor a week, get that information out there just kind of unobtrusively. And then we're also, we've started up a Patreon campaign, and it's okay. Not as well as the ones for World of Warcraft Insider and I can't remember the name of the other one. Some of the joystick sites that got shut down decided to go the Patreon route. And gamers must have a heck of a lot more or something because their campaigns have just, I mean, literally taken off. Ours is moving a little slow, but like I said, with the sponsorships, those are going pretty well. And, I think we'll at least be able to feed the pets, if not the humans, and maybe pay the mortgages. But it'll come along.
No, excellent. Best of luck to you, pal. As I said, if there's anything we can do to help, then do say so.
We'll be glad. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Patreon's excellent. We like Patreon. We get fairly moderate donations each month, but we're very grateful to those that we get. If you want to support Steve, then I'm guessing it's patreon.com/AppleWorldToday.
That is correct.
There we go. Good guess. And as is British Tech Network, so it's dead easy, isn't it? Just go to patreon.com and you'll find us and chuck us a book. That's all it takes. Next to him is Kelly G. How you doing, missus?
I'm well. How are you, Ewan?
I'm good. I'm good. We haven't really been talking for the last hour and a quarter.
Of course not.
I'll edit. Don't worry. No one will know. What have you been up to then, missus, since I saw you last night? Letting your hair down?
Yeah. A little more wrangling today. Not a lot, actually. Just waiting for the sun to come out, honestly. It's a little cloudy today, but it's going to clear up.
Is that like a groundhog thing? If you see your own shadow, you go back in?
I believe if you see your MacBook's battery expand, more weeks of winter.
Topical chat.
I was going to start singing "The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow," but I decided not to.
Thank you for that. I'll send you a
good
final
idea.
And last but by no means least, Brian Chaffin. How the devil are you, mate?
I am splendid, splendiferous even.
Excellent. Are you playing at the MacWest, the Mac Midwest Barbecue, Mac Midwest Mac Barbecue thing? Has Barry got in touch with you yet?
Barry has not gotten in touch with me, but in that the band is, I'm assuming you're referring to the band?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really led by Chris Breen, Dave Hamilton, and Paul Kent. So he would get in touch with one of them, because he's a smart guy. He knows who actually makes the decisions.
I'm just trying to make sure that there is that opportunity for him to come along and play lead triangle.
Oh, yeah.
I will let you know.
Oh.
So, Brian, that means you and Chuck are just the pretty faces?
No, Chuck definitely is in the leadership circle. It's me and Bob that are the not so pretty faces. Me and Bob and Dwayne.
That's one hell of a chorus, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I got to see you boys in a line doing some high kicks.
Wow.
Yes.
I did.
Okay, I'm going to make it my personal crusade to make this a reality.
I did say to Barry last week that if the Mac All Stars turned up to play his bash, then you had to play behind chicken wire and play Rawhide.
Yes.
Well, you know, we do play both kinds of music.
Excellent.
Country and Western.
I'm being called a pussy in the chat room because apparently real men play the cowbell.
Hey, man, triangles are important.
I can diversify.
The triangle is vital.
Right. We've had a couple of reviews. Thank you for everyone who sent a review. We got one from AZ on Twitter, who just said, just wanted to say, Ewan, the last Mac show was great. Really enjoyed it. Best episode I've listened to for a while. Everyone seemed to just click. Good one last week. Did enjoy it. One from SenCons in the UK, 5 stars. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and specifically Mac and Tech podcasts, but this is certainly the best Mac podcast. Ha ha. Good humour. Excellent guests. Intelligent discussion.
What show was that?
Apparently they had the volume down.
He's not listed. Good review of Mac products that openly compare to alternatives. I don't recall that bit either. And just enough flippancy. I do recall that. Certainly the best ringmaster that keeps it all together.
Indeed.
Make sure to listen every week. You should do the same. That's very kind of you, sir. Thank you very much for that. And we've got one here that's... Oh, no, that's a while back. And we've got one for the news show from UAE, United Arab Emirates. It's one of those shows that you just get it from the first minute. Great addition to the British Tech Network. Also, my favourite is the Mac and the Big Show. Super cool, fun daily tech news. Thank you. I'll pass that on to Kyle. He'll be very appreciative because he sits there all on his own, getting no feedback whatsoever otherwise.
Let me add a review then, because I think the Daily Tech News Show is awesome. I absolutely love it. And the fact that I'm friends with the person behind it is just for me. I would listen to it if I didn't know those guys, because it's a reliable source of all kinds of information, and it's short and sweet and to the point. It's great.
Yeah, no, it's I just hate the fact that Carl's better at it than I was.
He is, though. I'm not going to lie. No, he's really spectacular at that.
Well, the thing was, I mean, I'm not saying this in a negative way, but if you'd have gone back 3 years when I was doing it, he'd have said, oh, no, yeah, you do it better. I'd be like, yeah, thanks, Kyle. But I think I did do it a little bit better, but I do it far worse now. I subbed in for him for one day, and I listened to two of them back to back, and I thought, oh, I ain't doing that again. I'm out of practice as well. Let's just be kind. The news in Apple, there's been some. It was a bit of a fest yesterday, actually, really, that kind of kicked it all off. First thing I thought we should start with is Apple promotes games without in-app purchases in the App Store. Yeah. Round of applause.
Woo!
Well done, Apple. Well done, Apple. Absolutely. I think you listened to our podcast and heard me rant about in-app purchases, and that's what's caused it. I'm convinced. I have that much power. This is long overdue.
Yes, absolutely. I will say that there are some that do the in-app purchase smartly, like with Monument Valley. You could pay a little more and get some extra levels. You didn't have to. You could have won, air quote, won the game without having to pay any more than what you paid. And I liked that. The thing that I don't like is when you feel like you have to pay in order to do anything. There's a car racing game that I never played, whose name escapes me. That's good. One of the ones that worked you and up.
Good.
because you had to. Like, you had to pay in order to get to do anything of any consequence in the game, and that's crap. So I don't mind paying for a game. I don't mind paying for software. I think I sort of hold it to the somebody at a WordPress event one time said that you should hold your hosting to the shrimp dinner rule, which is if your hosting costs less than a decent shrimp dinner, you're not paying enough for hosting. And I think that's a good rule of thumb, and I feel the same. Like, if a decent cocktail costs more than the software that you're trying to convince me to buy, I should probably buy it. It's likely a no-brainer one. And I am happy to pay for software, games, non-game sort of stuff. I have no issue with it. So, and I know that apparently makes me some sort of weirdo, because I don't actually mind giving people money for the work that they do that makes my life better. But there you go.
That's Brian, who's disappeared and come back. He hasn't come back yet. I don't know what's happened there.
He's the resurrection of Brian.
He's definitely
when he comes back, his opinion on everything will be brains.
He needs to shove a couple of quarters in the meter, because that's just not acceptable on high quality shows like this. I'd like to say I can edit, but I can't, because it's all audio over the top of me talking.
Oh, we'll just be quiet till it's done.
Yeah, Kelly, have you swapped places with Greeny? Because only Greeny would work a shrimp dinner into a conversation about applications.
I have not, and you know I haven't, because I was actually introducing it as part of the topic. There we go. I was actually using it as a point to make a larger point. If it had been Greeny, you would have said something to me about in-app purchases, and I just would have started talking about shrimp dinner.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
In the voice of Alec Guinness.
Ooh.
These are not the shrimp you're looking for.
And there's a show title. So the other thing that I wanted to say, the other thing that I love about the promo that they're doing on the App Store is that these are games that cost money. It's one forever. Yeah. You know, like, you pay your $3, you pay your $5 or whatever, but then you're done.
You have an incoming call from TMO Brian.
Are we sure about it?
Hello, Brian.
Hello.
If you want to take a few extra minutes to get yourself a stack of quarters together so you can feed the meter during the show, that's fine.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I'm not judging.
I have network interference.
That's okay, mate. That's okay, mate. That's
a bummer.
That's what we call bad debt over here as well.
So, Brian, talk to us about the App Store and the great games with no in-app purchase. being featured on the front page.
God, there's so much. There's so much behind that. Starting with Apple's initial decision to allow games to be, to allow apps to be free in the first place. I encountered a study done by I think he's a Yale economics professor. I can't remember who it is. It's been a while since I read about this, but his point was that by making apps free, boy, I'm doing a terrible job explaining this. His actual point was that if Apple had made the minimum price of apps be a nickel or say a dollar, that people would choose the higher priced version of an app almost every time. So several backed it up with several examples that don't have anything to do with that. But basically, when people have a choice between free and cost, they choose free. When people choice between low cost and a higher cost, if the quality is evident, they will choose the higher cost almost every time. It's just an aspect of human nature, and that Apple kind of screwed the pooch by allowing things to be free. And then when that purchases in the first place, that enabled the freemium model to even get off the ground. So it's probably kind of stuffing the horse back in the barn, or at least trying to. But I suppose that promoting that is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, we can't pick a negative in the fact that they've done what they should have done all along, because the negative was when they didn't do what they should have done all along. But I think it's a positive. I mean, these are all absolutely pay once. There's no in-app purchases on these at all, is there? There's nothing. So it's not like just another tier of con. It is absolutely nothing.
One and done.
Yeah, one and done.
Why, look, it's pay once and play, or play once and pay, or I don't know, something like that.
Just gives you paying and then the playing about? With the...
The one thing I'm dead impressed with, we've had another Wirecast crash, if you hadn't noticed. But what I'm dead impressed with is the fact that it hasn't crushed a file. The file is a valid file, MOFIL file. So it's got some way that it's got of closing the file properly before it then blips off, which is uber impressive. Thank you, Telestream. That makes a whole difference. Well done, Apple, for that, because... that's something that I balked about for a long period of time, and I'm really glad that they've done it. And also, while we're on the subject of apps, there's an increase in file size. It's gone from 2 gig apps to 4 gig apps. I'm just trying to think in my own mind whether that's really just kind of graphics more than anything.
Well, the way I read it was that it was the size of the package you can submit to iTunes has increased. So that might mean you can include a higher res video as one of your, you know, in the screenshots you can have video now. So maybe they're doing it so people can have more video, or like the graphics, like you were talking about, making it so that everything that needs to render on every size of display that there is now takes more space than it used. The download over the air has not changed. It's still 100 megabytes. They changed it from you can't download if it's 50 to you can't download if it's over 100, and that limit is still in place. It's what you can submit to iTunes that's what's gone up.
But including, that's going to be your crushed file for, zippy-ish file before it expands when it's on install. So... you can get bigger games installing than you previously could, depending on what your compression technology is like for it when it expands at install. So there is bigger. I mean, there's a quote here about Final Fantasy VII was years away due to the 2 gig limit.
Yes.
So.
And that may not be the case now.
And that's not going to be the case now. Yeah, but the over the air limit download is still there as well as. It's interesting that's an Apple enforced one, not a carrier enforced one, because I've got unlimited data on my 3 account, but I still get the 100 gig warning.
Yeah, everyone gets the 100 meg regardless, and I think it won't allow you, period. I don't remember. Because you can, there's a switch for no downloading apps over data, over cellular at all.
Yeah.
If you want to set that, you can. Mm. So, which is a tip I give people who have a low data plan and want to make sure that they're not going against that limit. Like keeping things updated automatically in the background is something that will gnaw on your data if you're not aware. So.
Chat room says, is it me or does Ewan pixelate when he moves? Yes, it's not the video. I actually pixelate when I move. No, the other thing I was going to say...
I've seen it at Macworld and it's really disconcerting.
It's like I turned into Minecraft for a second and then back again. the only thing I was going to say was, I'm just rather simplistically going for video and graphics on this, but is there some other woo that they're going to be able to do that now they've got this extra file size that I'm not thinking of, not just graphics or in video or that kind of stuff?
All I can think of is that everything will look nicer on a nicer screen. If you have a 5K iMac, maybe the App Store will look a little less painful than it probably looks now. That's all I got.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I think you can cram more in. So, I mean, but I was thinking if you've got like fairly expansive worlds or something like that, then, or if you wanted something where it's a go anywhere kind of game, you know, like Assassin's Creed
certainly.
Or something like that, then that would enable that bigger maps, perhaps.
Yeah, certainly it would allow games to get bigger and for, more data allows you to do more stuff, obviously, depending on what it is. So... maybe it means there's going to be a new version of iMovie.
Well, there you go. It's official.
12-inch iPad is able to edit effectively.
No, come on. It's 18-inch. What are you talking about?
Oh, right. Sorry.
I want me 12-inch MacBook Air. That's all I'm saving up for.
I'm talking about the new
Mini.
I'm not
buying any more computers until that comes out. So there you go. That's official. The 2 to 4 gig increase will allow more stuff. You heard it here first. iCloud. I work even for iCloud. Beta is now open to everybody. So it doesn't matter who you are. Now, if you listen to this, you're probably a Mac user, so it doesn't affect you. I should have read this out on the Big Show really last night, shouldn't I? But if you're not a Mac user, you can now sign up for an Apple ID, and you can use iCloud Beta and iWork.
Oh.
Now, I think my only first thought on this was, this is just... squaring the eyes, a poke in the nose to the 365 release on the iPad. Excuse me, surely?
Yeah.
Totes.
Well, and I find it really interesting that, I teach this one iOS class at the community college, and we have a number of people that are in there who have an iPhone or an iPad, and they've used Pages, and they've used Keynote, and they said, well, the only thing I really hate is the fact that I can't use this on my PC, and now mm-hmm. they can. I think that's probably one of the, like you said, it's happened to the Office 365 release, saying, hey, well, now people can kind of round trip it as well on the PC platform simply by going to this web-based version of iWork. And I think they've done a surprisingly good job, too, of making the applications look pretty similar between web, iPad, and Mac. So, kind of a thumbs up to Apple on that one.
What was quite interesting to me was one of my customers is a Mac user, and he shared a document with me, and he didn't send it to my .Mac account. He specified my Gmail account, and I accessed it through my Gmail account, and I was in. I didn't have to put a password in or anything because I'd got the encrypted link in my account. So if it's in my email account, I click it, it must be me. And I thought it was effortless. It was brilliant. And when it has worked, I've been really impressed with the online sync on documents. I mean, it's real time. It's as good as Google Docs is. And it's just got that little bit more polish to it as well as.
And that's the catch, isn't it, though, when it works?
I'm going back to before Yosemite was released, where they stopped it. And you couldn't use it with anyone for a little while it went from the beta into the Golden Master, so.
Question is, how serious is Apple about the Windows market here? How much does Apple care about the experience? How many resources is Apple going to invest in further development? how, you know, is there going to be any kind of lag between what's supported on PC browsers and what is coming to iOS and Safari? And Apple has this long history of starting services and projects and then, you know, sort of ignoring them after a while. And I would hate for that to happen here, because it does seem like Apple has can use this as an opportunity to bring more people into the Apple experience.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really is a huge leap forward for them in terms of accessibility to the non-Mac community. And I mean, there's a bit of an experience question here, because if you're not Apple and you get an invite to use iCloud with someone and collaborate or something, is that experience going to push you towards a change though, Brian?
Yeah.
I mean, is it sufficiently polished now, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe, probably for some people. I mean, it's, you know, how many more people coming from the Windows side are going to be expecting iWork to be Office? Because iWork is not Office.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Apple's got to deal with some of that. You know, who've been in the Mac, who've been in the Apple world since you know Mac was the only thing, we might be used to the reality that Pages is not Word and that Numbers is not Excel and that Keynote is way better than Power hoped to be and it's you know dreamiest of dreams of all time, and but that's not the case necessarily in the Windows world. So it'll be interesting to see if anyone over there cares, and if they do care, I don't know, we'll have to see what their experience is like.
I think it's a feature parity thing, plain and simple. If you're using Office 365 and you email a document off to collaborate with somebody on it, it don't matter what the other person is running because they can do that. Google Drive is the same way. If I shoot a document over to Ewan, maybe he's got his PC in front of him. Maybe he's got his Mac in front of him. I don't know, but either way, he can get it done. And I think that this is just the more of the same. It's just Apple trying to get on that road. And I think that there's probably a whole lot of people. I mean, obviously, the numbers bear out. There are a number of people like Mr. Kelly, who's got the PC back here, but also has an iPhone. And this allows him to work on all of his stuff no matter where he is. So I think it's a smart move on their part. Absolutely. As long as, like Brian was saying, we don't end up with benevolent neglect. Like, oh, it's good enough. Now we're just going to not care for a while. It's good enough.
Yeah, I think one of the things about Office, Microsoft Office, has always been, you could almost say, a little bit scary to people. And, you know, especially folks who might be a little older or something like that. But, you know, I've talked to people who say, well, I don't need all the power of a Microsoft Word, and I just want to do some simple spreadsheets. I don't need the full Microsoft Excel. And I think that's where Pages and especially Numbers might kind of be more friendly to people than going in and, you know, taking a look at Office 365 and going, oh my God, you know, how am I going to learn all this? How am I going to be able to do this? Pages presents that very simple user interface, but there's a lot of power there if people really decide that they want to, you know, take advantage of it. So, you know, from that standpoint, it could almost be that fantastic gateway drug that people have been looking at.
Just like the iPhone and the iPad. This is just the software version of that, I think.
I think that's
exactly.
The thing, though, is that the user experience, if your example is Google Docs, has been very rudimentary, because that really is just a very basic spreadsheet, a very basic word processing document, which is what was the market wanted and fulfilled, and it worked in collaboration very, very well. But I think the thing now, the point you're making there, Steve, is dead right. The thing that's simple about Pages, yet powerful, is the fact that you've got an Excel spreadsheet within Pages without having to import an Excel spreadsheet or do a cross-reference document to it, and that will work for people online instantaneously. And the graphics with Keynote and that kind of stuff, developing a Keynote together with someone is extremely powerful. And I think that's the thing that Apple have got to make sure they don't break, though, because although people are used to that rudimentary experience and they want to see something better, if they're going to steal 365 users, they've got to have something that's rock solid, that doesn't go, sorry, no, not today. Because that's where enterprise is going to go, you know what, forget it. Okay, I mean, it might be shit, but at least 365 stays connected. Google Docs stays connected. That's going to be the key thing.
Apple. So I hope it works. I want it to be great, you know.
Well, I mean, we know those pieces of software are great. It's Apple's history in the cloud of getting two things to talk to each other is not great.
Precisely. And that's the thing. I think that's sort of what Brian was talking about. That's the thing that worries me about it. Like the part of this that long time cloud attempting to be cloud user Apple folk are sort of wondering, like, for me, the magic of this is going to be that it just works all the time. When it becomes a service upon which I can actually rely if I need to for one thing or another, then that's going to be the part to me that's magical, not no matter where I send it, it just works, because I have that now with other services. So if Apple can give me that, I think, just like Steve was saying, this is going to be a really excellent halo effect. I already do it in these things. You know, it gives me a good experience on my Windows machine, which quite honestly, at least with Windows 8, in my estimation, having that flawless experience from Apple in a browser is going to make me less pleased with the rest of my operating system. Maybe it's time to get a mini or something, you know?
Excellent. I'm being taunted in the chat room. Muller is saying this should bore you, and it's a link to how app developers are starting to develop apps for the Apple Watch. While we're on the subject of vaporware, let's talk about Apple working on a project that will give Tesla a run for its money, says an employee. This is supposedly an exclusive Brian. Thing that was sent to Business Insider. Brian, tell us the truth.
Well, I was working on a story when Business Insider published that, coming from a complete angle. And what I've been told is that Apple has been hiring some folks that are almost definitely only going to be working on cars. So, I mean, Bloomberg had this story where Tesla and Apple have been poaching from each other, and that Tesla was winning, and that Tesla had some 150 former Apple employees, and that Apple only had some 50 ex-Tesla employees. But what I've been led to understand is that Apple has been targeting some very specific people, and that those people have skill sets that lend themselves very much towards building cars, and that they're the kind of people that you would only get if you wanted to build a car. And clearly I'm keeping some information back, and I'm going to continue to do so. But it changed my mind on the idea that Apple was going to be eating a car. And then Business Insider ran this piece, and it just sort of backed up everything that I was already working on. And I think Apple's working on a car. Doesn't necessarily mean Apple's going to release a car, but I think Apple is working on one.
I was just going to say, so I don't want you to divulge any information you're not comfortable with. That's fine. But, I mean, my first response to this was bullshit. There's no way that Apple's going to diversify into the car market because it's not core business. But you're actually saying now you're pretty convinced that they are.
Well, all right, think about it. Here's the deal. You've got your gut reaction is that what the heck does Apple know about cars?
Yeah.
But do you remember when people said exactly that about cell phones?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right, and here's another thing. Cell phones and cars.
At least it's consumer electronics.
Well, true, but remember the whole point was
it's why true. Would they do it's that? True. A smartphone is certainly a small computer, but the knee jerk reaction when Apple announced the cell phone from a lot of mainstream sources in particular was that what does Apple know about cell phones? Apple is going to get its rear end handed to it because it doesn't know anything at all about the cell phone market and LOL Apple, that sort of stuff.
How can they do this? They're not BlackBerry. That was actually the argument at the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing about cars and cell phones is this. software plays a more important role in cars, especially with electric cars, as demonstrated by Tesla's performance improvements, but you know, through via a software update. And Apple happens to be one of the top software manufacturers, software developers on the planet. I mean, cell phones and cars have a lot more in common than one might think. And the things that they don't have in common are pretty well established. You know, you got your four wheels, you got your probably an axle somewhere. You know, you're probably going to go ahead and have a steering wheel, maybe a couple seats. I mean, there's a lot of aspects of car development that don't need to be developed from the ground up. Same thing with phones. Well, it probably needs to make a phone call, probably needs to receive phone calls, probably be able to access some kind of voicemail. I mean, I don't think it is as crazy as it sounds. And more importantly, Apple's big thing has been to enter new markets that are ripe for disruption. And television is one of those markets. And I think cars is another one of those markets. I mean, the auto has changed very, very little in it's. And I think that Apple could actually make a dent in that industry.
That's an interesting thought. The markets.
Well, they certainly have a dealership network, don't they?
Yeah, like they're going to get those in the
Apple stores.
You can barely get in with it. You can barely get your body inside the Touchwood Apple store some days on Saturdays.
It's true.
Let alone try and get a car in there for a battery change.
It's going to be a really small car.
But yeah, the devil's advocate side though is that Apple makes one of the mythologies from Apple is that Apple says no to a lot of things. And in fact, very few things get said yes to. But the flip side of that is that once a product reaches a certain point in development, it almost always comes to market, right? So very few things get to that point. But once they do, they almost always delivered. I don't think Apple is, I do not know exactly what Apple is working on here, right? Let me make that clear. I just know that the kind of folks that Apple is targeting probably are going to be making cars. And but that doesn't necessarily mean that Apple's going to release a car. I think we're probably a long way from any kind of automobile effort reaching that point.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's like, I think that's a good point, because let's say they got people who were wind farm engineers. It doesn't mean that they're going to make wind farms. It means they're going to make something for wind farms. So they need to know how wind farms are put together so that they can make something for wind farms. That's I like that a lot better. That kind of sits a little bit more comfortably with me in terms of business evolution.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to challenge your preconceptions now, would we?
He's not saying a word, is he? I'm trying. I'm trying to get that extra bit of information, but he's not doing it.
I really don't know what Apple is specifically working on. No. I don't. Like I said, I only know that.
It's an interesting thought. It's worth a debate, most definitely. I think that things like when we had the debate about there's definitely a TV. I think there definitely was a TV. I think Apple actually physically made a TV. But whether that was ever going to get past the jury about whether they were going to release it into production, that's the question, isn't it? And I think there's
it's true. I mean, Apple's working on all kinds of products, and most of them will never see the light. These are facts that are well understood about Apple, and I agree with you, by the way. I think that a TV was made, and I'll go you one step further. If Apple could have gotten the content deals that it felt it needed, that TV would have been released.
Yeah. Okay. Muller's start putting distracting links into the sodding chat room again. Sod off. Sod off. Just for anyone that's listening to audio, it's boob karate. Just Google it.
Right. No, maybe you shouldn't.
I've seen this woman before. She's crushed a beer can. So, nothing new. Moving on then. I've lost my link. two-step verification now available for iMessage and FaceTime. Significance of this, I mean...
Big.
There's a bit of of security breach. See, the one thing that I got a bit upset with Greeny talking about a few weeks ago, and I don't think he understood why I was saying, no, be careful. He was saying, iCloud got hacked. What? No.
No.
The person's account got hacked because they had a stupid password that was easily accessible. So I think one of the things I just want to say, based on the fact that libel laws in Britain are significantly different than in America, everyone, is let's not say that this was essential because iCloud was flawed, because there are no recorded hacks of iCloud directly, are there? There are shit passwords that allowed people into famous people's accounts, but no one has hacked the system.
Well, there was the proof of concept that was out there that allowed people to brute force attack iCloud passwords.
But okay, but that's never been done.
We don't know that, actually.
Well, okay. That's a fair point. We don't know that, so therefore we can't say that we do. So I'm just thinking,
facto.
Well, I'm just thinking that, like I said, I'm more likely to get my ass sued than you lot. So, because the libel laws are significantly more harsh over here and very, very different. So,
yeah, understood.
It's one of those things that you say, well, okay, well, this is a great thing to have. Don't get me wrong, it's significantly better. It's more security than there ever was. But it's not because the system was flawed. Therefore, is this just Apple falling in line with where the current market is, or have they taken a step any further ahead here? Based on the fact, you know, you've got this thumb recognition and all that kind of stuff on your device. Anyone?
One thing really kind of surprises is that they haven't set up a way, you know, you just mentioned thumb recognition and Touch ID. It really kind of surprises me that they haven't figured out a way of using Touch ID on all the devices that have it as a way of actually getting this, second form of authentication. You know, at this point, you're still getting that you still get that text message or, you know, some sort of, number that you're going to have to enter in somewhere. That really lends itself to, kind of being hacked there. Whereas Touch ID is pretty darn secure. So maybe that's something that's coming up down the road. We don't know.
I find it quite interesting with Touch ID that when your device is started, you've got to put your passcode in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I find that really kind of ridiculous when surely my thumbprint is significant, unless there is some hack whereby you can switch on while your thumb's on and they're worried about that. But I find that absolutely ludicrous. If you're going to do that, then say, all right, put your number in. Now put your thumb on the thing to get it going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I like it because I like that it's giving people an easy option for more security. And there's always the trade-off between security and convenience. I understand that. And I really like that lowering the bar so that things are more convenient and still able to be really secure. So I would love it if Touch ID were one of those accepted second factors. But I'm really, really pleased that this is something that they're doing. It's just more awareness. You know, I'm always the one that trots out the security story on the Big Show, talks about how this is important and, you know, get a better password and things like that. So it always makes me happy when something like this happens, you know, baked into the OS like that. It's a super handy thing. So I'm
something
happy.
That Dave Hamilton has always he very astutely recognized this right off the bat, is that Touch ID is not a security technology. It's a convenience technology.
Yes.
And when you think of it that way, I think maybe the requiring the passcode when a machine restarts might make a little more sense.
I would agree with that if on occasion my phone may open with a different finger, but I've tried and I cannot get it. It does not recognize anything else.
Well, you have to actually enter all those fingers and to be able to do that.
No, I'm just trying to count. No.
I've done these two fingers and this one.
Maybe that's my sentence structure that's gone wrong there, Steve, but that's not what I was saying. What was, okay. It was a counterpoint.
My phone doesn't just know it's my finger. One star.
No, what I'm saying is, you know, Dave's points were good. It is a convenience device, most definitely. It is very convenient. It's not a security device. I would agree with that part of it if periodically it made errors and it opened with other fingers that I had that I hadn't registered. Is that good?
There we go. That's the free.
That's the English I needed. So it's never done an erroneous open with a different finger. It won't do it, and I've tried to break it, and it won't do it. I can only get it to open with a solid thumbprint, and it does the thumbprint from all angles, and it's beautiful. And I would love to see my MacBook. I mean, I think, you know, look at the size of the thing. You could just see that in the bottom right-hand corner or left-hand corner of your MacBook Pro, and you just sit there and put your finger on it, and bang, it opens up. And you set up your What's It accounts, you know, your guest accounts for someone, and they walk up and put their finger on, and their profile instantly logs on and opens up. You know, that kind of stuff would be absolutely awesome. But it is a convenience device, most definitely, but I don't see it as insecure to fulfill that second part. Am I being unfair there, Brian? Or
I'm not saying at all that this factored in any way into the development of Touch ID and how Apple implements it and uses it. But here in the States, an idiot judge ruled that the police can force someone to apply their fingerprint to Touch ID to open an iPhone, so they can use physical force to do so. But you cannot physically compel or force anyone to divulge a passcode.
Right.
So,
Here I'm very excited that it makes me enter a passcode upon the first reboot. Because when the cops stop me, all I have to do is reboot my phone and then they're not allowed in.
Not because you're actually worried about anything, but for the sheer principle of the issue, I'm assuming, he says.
Yes, absolutely. There's nothing interesting on my phone anyway.
I don't want anyone going through it just because they feel they can.
See, now here's the thing, because in the UK, and Buller's in the chat room, and I know he knows a bit more about this, so he can correct me. But if there was a reasonable suspicion that a crime had been committed and the phone was part of that, you'd sent a text message which instigated a murder or instigated a theft or something like that because you'd seen that someone was out. If a police officer stopped you in the UK and said, right, I want to see inside that phone because I've got reasonable suspicion that a crime has been committed using it, then you would have to do it, or you would be obstructing the officer and he'd arrest you for obstruction of his investigation because he's got reasonable suspicion. I'm sure there's a whole argy-bargy about whether it was reasonable enough or not, but...
Right.
If you didn't...
Yeah, but you guys have been erring towards... more and more authoritarianism on such fronts for a long time.
I don't think we have. I think that's the perception of the media.
Have you seen the number of cameras in London?
That's not. I don't think that's authoritarianism in the sense that they use them for the purposes of tracking us all, etc. No. I think there's a lot of the cameras that you see are not state registered. They're not police registered. There are ones out there that are police for viewing traffic flow and stuff like that. But a lot of them are things about congestion issues, relieving congestion, changing lights to make sure that others go other ways and alternating routes. And there's an awful lot in the city of London that are privately owned, that are the buildings that are out there that are pointing towards their street or their bit of pavement. And in some cases, they're pointing to areas where they're not allowed to point, but they're just doing it anyway because no one's told them to change it. The proliferation of cameras in the UK is mostly private, not state, I wouldn't have said.
All right, well, it's your country. I'm not going to argue with you on that. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. I've seen a couple of TV shows that suggest one is heavily surveilled accessible cameras, so, especially in London.
I've got a fair bit of camera stuff here that's me livelihood. I can't do without it. And if it got stolen on a Sunday night, then Monday I wouldn't be able to work and it would be quite severe for me. So I've got a really good CCTV system that's got a box in a secret location that records that I can access online and I can view. And when we tried to sell the house a few weeks back, most of the people who came said, it must be a really rough area because you've got all this CCTV security.
Yep.
And I said, no, I just got a lot of stuff in the house that I can't lose. So therefore, I want to make sure that it's a good deterrent to people. But we've never been broken into thus far. And that's a statement of truth, not a superstition. And But that's me, and I surveil the street when you come in. You know, I catch you on the pavement before you come into my property, which I'm not supposed to do. I'm supposed to only limit to my property. But my point is, when they're on my property, they're of a certain height. Therefore, the angle means that I've got to, by nature, take in some of the street. But there's an awful lot of stuff that's not state-sponsored CCTV in the UK. It's private stuff that people sometimes shouldn't have or don't need in a lot of cases. And I don't really need it. It's just there to say, sod off, I'm watching you. And I've had people come up to the door, and you can see they've come to the door and they've turned away from the camera to try and talk to me, and I won't talk to them. Unless your face is in that camera, sunshine, we ain't having a conversation because there's something
obvious. What kind of people are visiting you?
No, I've had a couple of people come up and say, oi, mate, can I just ask you, and I'm like, hang on, turn your face to the camera. No, it's all right, mate, it's all right. And I'm like, well, I'm going to talk to you then, am I? If you won't look at my camera, I'm not even interested. Sod off.
What kind of dodgy neighborhood do you live? What's going on here? This is like a crazy story. You regularly have visitors that are like hiding their faces from cameras, asking you things.
I've had the odd.
Are you dealing drugs?
I've had the odd person.
Worse, he's dealing back.
It was Batwench. There we go. I've told you the truth. It was Batwench that wouldn't look at the camera when she came in. apparently, Muller says, that would be okay, but you'd need a PACE form, which is a Police and Criminal Evidence Act form, or you'd need a warrant. I thought you would have needed reasonable suspicion, but... and he says also, have you seen the number of cameras that there are in Las Vegas?
Yeah, it's very true.
That's true. So,
and every blackjack table... last story then, iPhone 6 Plus owners use twice as much data as 6 owners. Why?
Twice as much screen, duh.
Is it just twice as much screen and bunging down stuff that's got higher resolution, or are they just hogs?
I think it's because we love big devices so much that we just spend all of the time looking at them, like I've been doing while I've been recording this podcast. And seriously. Gotta love this device. It is awesome.
Yeah.
Have you got the 6 Plus?
Yes, I do.
I'm willing to bet that it's for a lot of people, because I've heard this from folks who had an iPad mini and got a 6 Plus, they don't use the mini anymore. So if this has become your primary mobile screen, of course you're going to use more data.
Yeah, no, I don't use it anymore. I haven't. I gave my iPad mini to my children.
The first thought that ran through my head is essentially what Kelly was thinking. I know that I split my mobile data by my iPhone and my iPad. If I had an iPhone 6 Plus, I might not split it. So therefore, it would be concentrated.
Yeah. So it really is just the fact it's on more, or the fact that what they're consuming then is the issue.
I should imagine that it's simply because it's being used and more, probably being used more often where a computer even might have been used rather than a smartphone. So I would imagine it's probably usage.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one, because it's certainly from... I use mine where I would have used an iPad before, but because I've got that bigger screen and movies particularly, and is there a big enough separation, you think, between movies on the 6 and the 6 Plus to mean that you wouldn't watch a movie on a 6 Plus, but you would on a 6?
Well, one of the things about the 6 Plus, and I did a response from a guy, strangely enough, in Britain, who made the comment that he was able to take his 6 Plus with that excellent battery life and watch a couple of movies off of Netflix last night, and it didn't take the battery down at all. So, you know, that's one of the things I love about this device. I can use it pretty much all day. I can watch video. I can play games. I can do whatever the heck I want to. I could probably even do a Skype call. But it has incredible battery life. So instead of saying, oops, I guess I'd better cut this short, not watch this movie or not play this game as long because my battery's running down, I think a lot of people...
Yeah, you totally can.
Yeah, I mean, you can. It's wonderful. It's like it's nuclear powered.
Yeah.
And I've heard from a number of people who got the 6 Plus, basically, that that they use it all the time. And exactly like you're saying, like, I don't have to worry about the battery. So I'll watch a movie on Netflix and it's not a horrible experience because I have enough screen to really appreciate it. Like on my 5S, not so much. You know, I can do all kinds of things and do a little bit more because there's a little bit more space, you know, on the screen in order to operate. So I think between the battery life and the size, yeah, like if I had been an iPad mini user and gotten a 6 Plus, I probably would be one of those people who was just mowing down data like it was going out of style because I have the option. Like if my iPad had unlimited data on it, then I would probably use my iPad a lot more, my Air. I have an Air right now. And if it had unlimited data, I would use it all the time when I was out and about too. Like, I think that's a huge thing. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Fair point. D. Crane in the chat room says, I have to say, I'm very curious about the 6 Plus, but I'm waiting for the next phone to be released in October. 6 Ooh. Plus S.
6S Plus. How are they going to do that? It'll be an X, like with the old Mac models. It'll be the 6X.
6X Plus.
Yes, say that all day long, genius bar. it's not going to end well.
He's saying, I used to say no way, but as time goes on, the 6 Plus does have me intrigued. And I've got to say, it was a huge leap. I mean, it was a big phone when I got a hold of it. But, I mean, it fits in my pocket fine. It works. I've got big pockets, admittedly, because I'm a fat bastard. But it works just fine, and I love it. I do like having it. I still love the photos out of me 1020, and I still take my 1020 with me when I want to do any photography or anything like that. But the iPhone's not a horrible experience. I want the iOS to change, but I said that last week, so it's a pain in the ass. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. We love them to bits. 6 years now, nearly, we've been with them, and we're going to be with them for God knows how long. I'm going to go down and have some dinner with them, I think, or a bit of lunch with them in a couple of weeks, and chat about where we're going with the things and that kind of stuff. But they really have been very kind to us, and you've been very kind to them. They are very happy with the relationship we have because they feel that you guys return the loyalty tenfold, and that's the way it is. You know, they pick up a lot of our costs. The servers that we have would cost us £400 a month just to keep them running. So, you know, we're a decent-sized podcasting network in terms of the amount of data that we consume, for sure. So please, please, please go to britishnetnetwork.com/sponsors, click on the UK2 link, use the offer codes, then we get the kudos for it, and we love them to bits and they love us to bits, and it's just one of those things where you want to hug, you know, really good. And thanks to Wirecast as well. Don't forget, you've got ScreenFlow from Telestream. That's a fantastic piece of software for doing screen capture on your device, and it works seamlessly, absolutely beautiful. It's great for doing screencasts and that kind of thing, so check them out. Go to telestream.net and buy ScreenFlow off them. It's 50% off at the moment, I think, because it's Mother's Day or Valentine's Day or something. There'll be an offer code kicking around. And they gave us Wirecast, $2,000 worth of software, so that me and Paul could run what we do on here and keep it all super smooth and gorgeous, which it has been today completely. And last but by no means least, it's the bash. Yes, it's come round again. It's 3rd and 4th of July. 3rd for the curry, 4th for the bash itself. And all you've got to do is buy your ticket, £20. Now, it's not an entertainment event. What you're doing is chipping in for your bit of what it costs. The venue costs £400 just for the day. So, you know, it's a big old fantastic local garden down in a little quiet English village, and it's everything you stereotypically think it would be in England. If you come in from overseas, well, I'll buy you a ticket. There you go. That's a big, big promise. The rest of you is £20, and that is all your food, all your beer, all your soft drinks, and all the children that you've got under 16 years of age. So it's not just your ticket. So if you're Lee Garrett, you're turning up with you and your missus, £40 gets you and all the children in. Superb.
What about Angelina Jolie and Brad?
Yeah, no, they can't come.
Okay, all right.
I've already asked them.
They're busy.
And Angelina's shopping for a new child that day. So.
Oh. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm just joke. That's a joke. That's a joke. She doesn't
buy it. Oh, that's nice. I like that. Man. Oh,
she doesn't buy them. I mean, you know, she doesn't buy them. She's very egalitarian, and she adopts people that need it as well as. And I mean, how bad can her life be? She's shagging Brad Pitt, for Christ's sake. I'd shag Brad Pitt. I better move on. So Bash, 3rd and 4th of July. Now, if you're coming over, if there's a couple of you, say Brad and Angelina were actually coming, if Brad and Angelina were coming, over the road there's a travel lodge, and it's not the Hilton Hotel, you know, it's something fairly basic, but it gets you a room for the two of you for two nights, £58. That's $75. So you can get a room for two people for two nights for $75 at the moment. All you can do is search B36 Travelodge and you'll find it over there. It's at the Bradford Arms and you can book it up. I think there's not many rooms left because I know people in the chat room last night, Chris Campion said he booked his room. Batwin said she booked her room. I know two other people have definitely booked rooms, so I think they might be going thick and fast at that price. So if you want to go so much, Kelly, get your ass over here.
My plane tree ticket won't grow.
Oh, we need to water it. Wind Rider wants I'd shag Brad Pitt to be the show title. It might be. It might
Kelly,
be.
I think both of us and Brian as well. All three of us.
We're in agreement.
Get a Patreon put together and back us, and we'll get our tickets, fly over, and definitely.
And we will live stream the snot out of it. We will take pictures. Like, yeah, I'm not above.
Well, it's July 4th as well, so it's perfect day for you.
Mm-hmm. Even better.
Over. And you can go back from not just seeking your independence, but now you're on the offensive and you're starting to take over the world. You could have an empire where the sun never sets. There we go.
The sun never sets. The pasty nerd empire.
On the American empire. Oh, dear God. There you go. Bash, 3rd and 4th of July. And if you've got an excuse like, oh, I don't know if I can push it past the missus. That's my wedding anniversary. My missus is coming to the bash on our wedding anniversary. So if I can do it, I don't want any of your lame crap excuses. Right. Have we got a cool thing? Stevie Sandy.
Let's see. The cool thing I have is a brand new website.
Really? Tell us more, Steve.
You get to promote
it's
yourself.
Apple World Today. And appleworld.today, we got one of those really nifty new top-level domains. But actually, I did want to bring up one set of apps, not just an app, but a set of apps that work very, very well. We're using Squarespace for our hosting, and they have, over the years, I remember the first time I tried using one of their iOS apps, horrible experience. I mean, really couldn't do anything with it. And, when we started looking at using them for Apple World Today, I decided, I guess I'd better see if I can actually use my iPad or iPhone to do some blogging. They've got a great tool called Squarespace Blog that is just a kind of a wonderful little blogging tool. The thing that really surprised me about it was I was able the other day with this Clamcase Pro and my and that app to write a complete post, grab images, upload them, do all the setting changes, and to put in tags and categories and everything else, and publish it. And that's something, you know, it's so much better than our old Tua system was. I'm not even going to talk about that.
I was going to say, can you upload a picture? Which was always the hurdle on the iPad over at Tua. So that's exciting.
Yeah, it was a good thing. The second thing, and of course, I guess you could say we're almost being obsessive about it this week, but they also have a metrics app. And for people who are running a site and really wanting to see how many people are coming in and where they're coming from and how long they're spending and all the rest of this stuff, wonderful, wonderful app on the iPad or the iPhone. It presents Sensoring is a kind of a wonderful little dashboard with all sorts of little windows, and look and say, how come there are not, 10 million people coming to the site instead of just 1 million? So I got to hand it to Squarespace. I've used them before. As I'm getting to use the tool more and more, I'm really, really impressed. So kind of an unpaid advertisement for Squarespace and their apps. That's my cool thing.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Kelly, what do you have for us?
I have two things, actually. One of them is an iOS app, because we were just talking about security. It's an app that we were talking about security and convenience. And so it's the, it's called Mac ID. And the reason that I enjoy it is because you can use it, you can use your phone, and the Touch ID on your phone will your computer. And I think it's awesome. And I like it because it's sort of, to me, it's the evolution of a previous iOS app I used to use called KeyCard, which used Bluetooth. And I have my phone in my pocket all the time. So when my phone and I walk away, my computer locks. And when I come back, then my computer opens up for me. I think it's awesome. So Mac ID is a super cool little app. I think, Steve, was it you that wrote about Mac ID back in the day?
Yeah. Yeah, and in fact, if you take a look at the screen, the live screen, I'm actually showing the app. I love this app. Sometimes it's a little, using the proper UK term, a little dodgy, but sometimes I'll walk up to the machine and it doesn't come up and say, hey, do you want to unlock? The most part, it works just fine, and I absolutely love it. It's nice to be able to use Touch ID to log into my machine rather than enter my long password. So, yeah, I agree. Big thumbs up on ID.
So I think it's fantastic. And then my bonus pick is from a band that is local that I love, and they're called the Double Clicks. And they make music for nerds, for the most part. And they have a cover song that they put up about a week ago, a little more than a week ago, of The Rainbow Connection. You know, Kermit, Muppets, yeah. I love them, and I like to share them whenever I get the opportunity. And this is two things that I like very, very much, which is the song Rainbow and the Double Clicks. So you should go check it out. Totally free. Go listen to it. You can buy the track from them, name your own price. And it's pretty fantastic. And if you get a chance, listen to some of their other songs. I think that they are lovely, and you should check them out.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Brian, what do you have for us?
Now, the thing I have is something I'm hoping I did not mention here before. Steam Workshop on Etsy. I haven't talked about that here, have I?
No.
I don't think so.
All right. I love this stuff. Totally, totally obsessed with it.
This is completely true, I can attest.
The first thing that attracted me to what this guy was doing is he makes these USB drives, and he puts together these incredibly gorgeous casings that are steampunk, not inspired, they're total steam. And some of them have glass and glass as part of the enclosure, and some of them have moving gears so that when you actually plug in the USB drive, they turn. Drawing power off the USB port to turn these gears that aren't actually doing anything, and I love that. Some of them have screw-on caps. Now, do you need a screw-on cap for your USB drive? No, of course you don't. Should you have one? Yes, you absolutely should have a screw-on cap for your USB drive. He makes everything out of brass and copper. Everything is soldered. It's brazed, actually, which is even better than soldering. He's not using any glue. His USB drives are waterproof. I've actually seen him, like a video of him immersing one of the ones with moving gears in a cup of water, and it's just fascinating. And he also makes Zippo lighters that have been steampunkified. And I just, this man's work is amazing. He is an amazing artist, and he makes functional art, and I love what he does. Steam Workshop on Etsy. Did you happen to find it?
I shall go and have a look. Most definitely.
I'm almost there now, so yeah, we'll have it in a sec.
I can. It's etsy.com/shop/steamworkshop.
Did you guys see that Etsy is selling Millennium Falcon guitars? Etsy is selling Millennium Falcon guitars. Let me find the link. I've got it here. It's just when you said Etsy there, that made me think. Uh, Because, I mean, you being a guitar player, Brian, you'd think that was pretty awesome.
I will also point out while you indicted up that link that the guy behind Steam Workshop says that he can work with any USB card you like, and he can do custom stuff. You could commission him to trick out a 32 gig flash drive or, you know, something if you want to. So, and the stuff that he makes is amazing. Like, I'm not a huge steampunk person, and I still looked at all this stuff and went, ooh. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome. And Brian actually has an item of his
built. Oh, my goodness. I don't have it here on my desk. I've got one of his Zippo lighters, and it's an amazing piece of functional art.
Yeah, and you can attest to, like, it's solid, and, you know, it's
really good. The chip is amazing. I mean, I keep this thing in my pocket with, you know, change and keys, and it, you know, doesn't even blink. I want one of his USB drives with all my heart, not because I have any use for one whatsoever, but just so I can have it. But they're a tad on the pricey side. The ones with moving parts tend to be close to $300. The ones without moving parts tend to be about, you know, $120, $150. It's
but they're
true
glorious
craftsmanship.
Yeah, they're really amazing.
And just there you go. There's a Millennium Falcon guitar, just to prove that they really do exist. Muller says,
okay.
Ewan says, does it do the Kessel Run? Well, mate, if you hum it, I'll play it.
There you go. I can hum a few bars. I have to ask,
yes?
If you're going to play a Millennium Falcon guitar, who plays the Rebel bass?
Oh, that's bad.
Oh!
That's Keith Chegwin level. Which is actually a bit of an honor. So there you go. Well done, girl. That was well thought off the top of your head. Michael Thing.
Just waiting for someone to demand the location of the Rebel base now that I've said that. Anyway.
Michael Thing, let me just put a search in so we can get it down. There we go. Is Live Media Player. So Live Media Player is a free application for iOS. There you go. And you get that thing, and that's all it looks like. And if you go and do a search, you can type in sport, and you type in your sport thing, and it comes back with BT Sport. Now, I don't know how legal this is, unless they're paying a license fee. But it's, that said, it's not ultra-high definition or anything, but there you go. Danny Baker's show on BT Sport at the moment, and you can watch it. And like I said, it's not horrible, but it's not high res, but it's certainly good enough to watch on a mobile device on the train. Live Media Player, that's it. And there's tons of stuff on there. And basically, whatever your search criteria is, if you want documentaries, if you want films, you just type that in the search, and it comes back with choices. That's it. It's free, and you can get an awful lot free, and you can get a premier service on it, which is £7.99, and you buy it once.
Is it local?
And that's it. No. I mean, I get stuff that's European on there and international.
No, I mean, can I have it?
Indonesia? I don't know. Check it out. Go to iTunes now and see if you can get Live Media Player.
Okay.
It appears that we can.
Yeah. So download that. Get a free version. Type in sport or movies or documentaries or Mythbusters or whatever you want. And it's stuff that's being played live now around the world. And like I say, I've put in sport, and you'll get Indonesian sport, you'll get Filipino sport, you'll get Australian sport that'll show up on it. And like I said, it's not horrible quality, but it's not high def or anything. And I don't know if it's strictly legal. That's
minor issue.
No, unless BT Sport has said, you know what, we'll use this as like a little drug sale. Yeah, you can watch it, but it's low res, so, you know. You want to watch the full thing? I don't know. Or whether the fact that I pay $7.99 gets me more channels and then they pay them to those channels. But the BT one, you get free of charge. So when you, in the free app anyway. So download it, have a play, see what you can get worldwide over. The $7.99 I've put in, and I paid the $7.99, but I don't know what I'm getting extra. I can't find what I'm getting extra for it. So Maybe it's a continuous thing or a time thing, or I don't know. But it doesn't seem to be any different than what I was doing when it was free. So there you go. But I don't know if it's legal, but it's in the App Store. So in America as well.
Well, and still went up. It looks like it was updated January 28th. So that's a good 2 weeks to get busted. So.
Well, I've had it for a month now, so.
Yeah. Well, mine doesn't say when it was released. It just says the last update was a couple of weeks ago. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Steve, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me at any time at appleworld.today. And that is the URL for that. So.
Okay. Thank you, mate. Best of luck with the thing. As I said, please let us know if we can help out in any way, promotion or otherwise.
Thanks.
Kelly, where are you, girl?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and a wide variety of other places as Verso. You can also find me over at the Mac Observer and occasionally on the Day Observations podcast there. And you can hear me elsewhere on this network and hosting the after show with Mike Rose.
Excellent, Mrs. Thank you very much. And Brian, where are you, sir?
I am the editor-in-chief at the Mac Observer. You can hear me on the Apple Context Machine podcast, sometimes on TDO as well. And I'm at geektales.com. That's my personal blog.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. We'll be back again next week. We're moving to Thursday, however, because it's my wife's birthday on Friday, and I might be able to do it on my anniversary, but not on her birthday. So I will be doing the Mac show at 3 o'clock on Thursday next week, and then the big show on 8 p.m. on Thursday as normal. So come and join us. It'll be a bit of a marathon, but see you there. Thanks for listening. See you.
All right. Bye.
Later.
And then there was just me.